Whenever the Roman Empire conquered a new province or a new town, they put up, either at the gate of the city or down in the marketplace, a Roman yoke, made everybody march under it as a symbol of their surrender. Thereby, the people, the conquered people, promised, among other things, to pay tribute, give obeisance, and assist the Roman Empire. One of the smaller requirements was that they should carry a Roman soldier's pack a mile or run an errand for a mile. This was at once a most humiliating and chafing experience, for, as Moses said, these were a stiff-necked people, proud people. Jesus knew this, and I think this is one of the reasons that he made this unforgettable thing a carrier for this great truth. I imagine that when Jesus spoke this sentence, those around him looked at him with astonishment and amazement. I can see them nudge each other. Surely they would be saying, he doesn't mean that. But Jesus was not speaking literally. Neither was he speaking literally when he said, turn the other cheek. Nor give him your cloak if he sues you at the law and takes away your coat. In fact, very seldom in the great teachings of the Gospels does Jesus speak literally. Usually there is a deeper meaning to everything that he says. Here he is presenting great principles. The principle in this text, of course, as you would know, is the love mile, or that you should do a little more than is expected of you. He was talking about happiness and the abundant life. The whole Sermon on the Mount is about happiness and abundant life. And you cannot have abundant life without practicing the second mile. Jesus knew the second mile would do three important things. First, the second mile always leaves a deposit of happiness in the heart of the one who practices. Let me illustrate. A famous surgeon operating in an amphitheater with some 500-600 medical students and other doctors watching him in New York, some time ago had finished his operation. The patient was wheeled out. And as the surgeon unfastened his mask, a young doctor came up respectfully and said, Doctor, may I ask you a question, please? Certainly, was the surgeon's reply. A doctor said to the young man, doesn't medical books say, don't they say, that one knot tied in the thread with which you sew up a wound is sufficient? With a smile, the old surgeon answered, son, I know what's in your mind. You're going to ask me why I tied three knots when I finished sewing up that wound. Well, son, the third knot is my sleeping knot. I'll awaken in the night tonight, and the details of this operation will flash before my mind. I wonder if by any chance a thread could possibly have come loose, my patient being danger. And I'll remember that I didn't tie just one knot, nor two. I tied three knots. And with a smile, I'll snuggle down in my pillow and go right back to sleep. It's a great principle of life, son, the old doctor continued, to tie three knots where you are only required or expected to tie one. Now, it was something like this that Jesus was saying when he entreated us to travel that second mile. You'll be a better man. You'll be a better woman. The second one, it calls for the best in others. You can't possibly travel the second mile without influencing others and starting them traveling it. It affects everybody around you. I honestly believe that if one person in a home put into practice this second mile that Jesus is talking about, he alone or she alone could transform the home. And how many homes would be inviolate today if people practiced the second mile? doing a little more than they were expected to do. A few nicer things than anybody had a right to even ask them to do. Let me illustrate. This is the first time I ever saw the second mile. I shall never forget. I was working as night secretary in the YMCA. A new general secretary was secured. He redistributed the work, and he gave me the books to keep at night. I never did like to keep books, and I resented his giving me this extra work. And every single page of those books showed that I resented it. For the first few months, it was just written all over them. I'm afraid they were the ugliest set of books ever kept on earth. Then one day, something happened. I asked the new secretary, Mr. Goodman, if I could go hunting, bear hunting, with my gang and my dogs that were going back up in the bear loop the day after tomorrow, would there be any chance for me to get off tomorrow night? He thought a moment and answered with a smile, "I think so, Roy. Somebody'll have to work overtime for you, but I believe we can arrange it all right. If I can't get anybody else, I'll work for you myself. Go ahead and kill a bear." So I went out with the dogs and hunted for 2 days and slept out on the mountain that night in between. Got back just in time to get to work. He could see how tired I was. After a while, he came over and with that same fine smile and put his arm around my shoulder, he said, "How many miles did you walk in the last 2 days? Aren't you pretty tired?" And I said, "Yes, sir, but I'm all right. I can work through the night." He said, "Well, I worked for you last night, and I'm out a bit sleepy, for I slept part of the day. Slip upstairs and go to bed." And he said it sort of confidentially, "Slip upstairs and go to bed, and I'll wake you up by and by. You sleep till I come get you." He just told me once, and I was gone. When I opened my eyes, next, the sun was shining bright. It was day. I wondered what in the world had happened. Had I gone to sleep on duty? I jumped up and ran downstairs and found that he'd gone home. But the day secretary handed me a note that he had left. I shall never forget the note. "Dear Roy, I came up and looked at you, but you were sleeping so soundly I didn't have the heart to awaken. I didn't mind working for you at all. It wasn't a hardship, so don't feel bad about it. Go on home, get your breakfast, and come back and work from me till noon while I sleep a little. Then I'll come back on, you come back tonight, and we'll all be straightened out. I really enjoyed working for you, Roy. Maybe you haven't found it out yet, but I love you. It was signed Manly Goodman." By and by, I read the note over. After I'd read it over 2 or 3 times, I got down on my knees. I asked God to forgive me for the way I'd treated one of the best men I ever knew. I asked him to forgive me the way I'd kept those books. Now, beloved, if you want to see the prettiest set of books that ever were kept on earth, you can find them in that YMCA. It's written all over them. That second mile that Jesus talked about. That's the first time I ever met him. That's the first time I ever saw it. And I'll be indebted for a lifetime to the man who lived the second mile for me the first time. That's the thing Jesus is talking about. "Whosoever shall compel thee to go with him 1 mile, go with him 20. And remember that when you walk that second mile, you will start somebody else down the same beautiful second mile road. Now, the third one is that it lightens life's burden. I don't think this is overdrawn. Here's a Jewish boy working out on his farm. Roman soldier comes along and calls to him, "Come carry this pack a mile. I'm tired." Now, every Jewish boy had measured off a mile down the road each way. He put a peg in because the Roman army had a fine sense of justice, and they wouldn't make a man go but just 1 mile. He didn't have to go but the 1 mile. So that boy, when he was called, threw his hoe down, ground his teeth, pinched his teeth, dug his fingernails into the palms of his hands, came slinking down and crawled over the fence. The Roman soldier walks on. He looks at the pack and then looks at the Roman soldier. Picks it up, drags it along down the road, and slows his Roman soldier down. And he gets to the milepost, he slams it down. "Take it," he says. "I won't carry it another foot. I hope someday my nation's on top and I meet you face to face. And I hope I've got a ton on my back to make you care. It goes back furious, tested, climbs back over the fence. Can't work. Breaks his hoe against the tree. Goes home. All right, here's the other. Normal soldier comes down the road and calls to a young man who has been with Jesus. Been listening to the master's teaching. Come carry this pack of miles, says, I'm Tom. Young man vaults the fence, picks up the pack. And he says, I'm glad to carry your pack of miles. I want to hear the news. Talk to me about Rome. How do you get your army to drill with such precision? Man passes the milestone. Roman soldier stops and says, fella, there's your milestone. You're too fine for me to take advantage of. Oh, it's just a mile of town. I was going downtown anyhow sometime today. I just carried along down the rest of the way. And step along together down to the edge of the city. And you see that Roman soldier that pulls off his greased gloves. And he says, fella, you don't know how you've lifted my burden for the day. You've made these miles short. I think more of your country because of you. If you ever need a friend, I want you to remember my name. Now watch that boy as he goes back up the road. Head back, shoulders up, whistling a merry tune. That hour of self-approval is worth an old month of ordinary living. Takes his hoe up and does 2 hours work in one. And then goes home, and as he comes up toward his house, his wife, watching for him, begins to smile. Put your arms around him when he gets there. You can hear her say, I know what you've been doing. You've been traveling that second mile. It does lighten the burden. It does make people happy. Did you ever stop to think that Jesus never asked us to do anything that he didn't do himself? They'd driven the nails into his hands and feet. They'd hung him up to die. Then in the agony of his suffering, he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. His second mile.
Heard Dr. C. Roy Angel of Miami, Florida, in a transcribed gospel message. The music was by the choir of the First Baptist Church of Atlanta, Georgia, with Mr. Ray Smathers directing and Mrs. Smathers at the organ. We invite you to be back with us next time. This is the Hour of Power.